So today it seems like anyone can be a personal trainer regardless of the sport. It's become a big, big business. Now the challenges that personal trainers have presented to sports and our team's culture, that's a conversation for another day, because today I'm excited to share my conversation with Gannon Baker. He's been a personal trainer in basketball for 30 years now, and he's someone who doesn't just view it as a business, but he sees it as a mission, as an opportunity to transform lives. So it's really cool because I actually remember as a high school basketball player watching his training videos. And one of the amazing parts of his journey is really how he went from working with his players on just skill development to taking his work with players to the personal and character development. And I think it's one of the big reasons why he is actually regarded as one of the premier basketball skills trainers in the world. I mean, he's worked with Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, Chris Paul, Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Brittany Griner, Maya Moore, and many other players. Now, in the first half of today's episode, Gannon is going to share with us some lessons he took from his time with Manu Ginobili of the San Antonio Spurs, and he shares some great insights into Greg Popovich. And in the second half of our conversation, Gannon's going to share some important advice for us as coaches if we want to grow personally. Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm JP Nurbin alongside my co-host Nate Sanderson. And every week in 30 minutes or less, we're giving you transformational leadership tools and strategies. This podcast is brought to you by Thrive On Challenge, which provides mentorship for coaches to help them grow as a coach and build their culture. You can learn more at thriveonchallenge.com. You're listening to episode 123, Improving and Growing Ourselves, with guest Gannon Baker. So Gannon, just before we connected to do this podcast, I actually read an article that you wrote about your time with Manu Ginobili. And for our listeners, Manu Ginobili played for the San Antonio Spurs under Greg Popovich during their 15-year time, where they won 5 NBA championships and considered one of the biggest, best dynasties in sports of all time by many. Now, you got this inside look into to the Spurs franchise, which is special because I know you spent a lot of time with a lot of high-level players, everyone from LeBron James and Amari Stoudemire and other guys out there. But can you share a little bit about some of those insights that Manu shared with you about the Spurs franchise, not just at the peak of their success, but kind of early on when they started to become successful and build that culture?
Man, you know, Mono and I did a camp in China, and I was able to sit down with them, break bread with them, get on the court with them. We actually played 3-on-3, and he guarded me, and I guarded him. That was interesting. That was fun. never forget that. And you know, I'm a learner. I'm a coach. I'm a messenger. So I asked him point blank, look, man, I go all over the world. I have a lot of people that I can touch. Can you give me some nuggets? Can you tell me some things that are authentic that I can share to make other people's games better? And so, you know, I asked him a lot about Pop and the Spurs culture. And the biggest thing I took away was Pop and the coaches, the staff on the Spurs, really were into treating the players as people first and players second. And what he meant by that was it starts from the warm-up. You know, all the coaches go by and shake your hand and see how you're doing and actually have a real conversation with you. How's your family? What'd you do last night? What do you think about, you know, what Trump's doing? You know, like stuff you would talk to your own family with or your own brother with, or, you know, they talk about culture, politics. They have mandatory meals together, you know, and at first it might be a little inconvenient, but after a while, after you understand what's really important in life and it's not the NBA championship that's important, it's the journey to that. These players crave those dinners with Pop. They crave the time that they spend with each other. So it was really like a family. And it wasn't, you know, obviously there's a lot of pressure with corporate America. There's a lot of pressure in the entertainment business with the NBA. But Pop was able to camouflage that pressure and make the Spurs organization more like a family. And so he was a father figure. Pop, you know, you talk about tough love and coaches really being aggressive and yelling and you know, there's a lot of truth to that, but Pop did it in a way that was respectful. Pop did it in a way that the players understood it. So he was, you know, Manu said he was like a Marine. He was tough, but he always cared. His passion was bigger, you know, resonated bigger in the player's emotional self and mental self than, you know, embarrassment or pain. And so he's the, not only the best coach he's ever had, but one of the best men he's ever met. And how they treated each other, like, you know, they were their teammates. It was amazing how they could coach each other. They held each other accountable in the locker room. Nothing was off limits. Everybody held everybody accountable. Pop, you know, coached Tim Duncan the hardest. And so Manu was like, man, as a rookie, if our MVP of the league is being held accountable for being late or touching a line or, you know, setting your, you know, holding your screen 2 seconds, then everybody else was able to fall in line. And so it's just the accountability, the truth telling, and the family love that the Spurs had was really incredible. I mean, simple things that you and I know, but when you hear from a world champion, I mean, you know, it's priceless.
Yeah, and I think one of the big takeaways there I just got there is just what they did as a staff to intentionally, like you just said, from the warm-up. You know, and I know it doesn't stop just there, that it translates to other parts of the program, but just the warm-up, you know, the coaches are just coming up and they're having conversations, not basketball related. You talked about, you know, asking something around politics, you know, but I'm sure it goes beyond that. It's just, you know, and for coaches out there that are listening, they may struggle to have those conversations with kids. And I think what's just powerful is Popovich was really, really intentional about those conversations in that period of time to start to develop those relationships. That's a really, really important piece. Now, you know, you mentioned the kind of the tough love, and I think Pop is really known for getting fired up at times and having a few harsh words for players. But, you know, I don't watch them daily or anything like that, but I feel like that has probably gone down even over time, that he probably, when he was first starting out with the Spurs and, you know, to now, he's probably not having those really, really intense moments with guys. Yeah. Did Mono talk about that at all, or?
Yeah, like over the years, you know, kids are different. They handle, you know, a coach's tone of voice differently. Players, for whatever reason, maybe it's because a lot of them are dealing with mental health issues and depressions and sensitivity. But a lot of players now can't get yelled at, especially in the NBA, in front of their peers, in front of the media, in front of others. So, you know, I mean, we covered so much in 4 days with Manu, but that was actually what we talked about, how Pop has changed over the years. Like early Manu, Pop wasn't as, you know, he didn't use physical touch as much as a love language. You know, late Manu years, he hugged guys, he high-fived guys. You know, I do this instinctively when I'm correcting a guy or, you know, quote-unquote, yelling at a guy, I smile. Hey, man, why are you doing that, man? You know, it's almost, you use sarcasm instead of a tough spirit. So absolutely, Manu said he has changed and he's gotten not softer, but more, you know, more empathetic, if you will. I think that's a skill a lot of coaches need to work on that I see struggle. You know, that's something that as a teacher, you have to learn how to use your words that bring life and death. You have to have creative conversation. You have to have an emotional heart where, you know, you're going to break the kid's bad habit, but you never break the kid's spirit. And Manu said definitely Pop used those strategies. He would even have, you know, yelling at a guy where he wanted to get a guy's attention. He would even have the captain, Manu, go over and say, hey, man, go tell them what Floppy is because I'm about to kill him right now. So you go tell him. And so Pop would, you know, hey, Mono's got something to say to you. Don't worry about it. Let's get the next one. So the kid wouldn't feel that bad because it's not coming from Pop, the Hall of Famer. It's coming from, man, Manu, the All-Star. So actually the All-Stars. So I thought that was really intriguing and a practical way to, you know, it's peer tutoring. It's, you know, it's one of the levels of development as a coach. You got to emphasize it. It's, you know, once you teach your player how to do something, All right, get them to share their success. Get them to teach. You know, have them to be self-sufficient and self-reliable, so that you know you're not coaching robots or puppets. You're actually, you know, letting them figure it out. Now they can go out and teach and do it. So, but that was very interesting.
Yeah, I know. There's two big things I think we got to pull away from that. One is I really like that strategy that you're sharing there of just going to one guy and having that guy talk to their guy instead of going directly to that player. And, you know, we had a podcast probably about, you know, 4 or 5 episodes ago talking about what we call, you know, the rule of three and getting players to intervene rather than the coaches always intervene. So that's a really cool example of that in play. One of the big things I want to kind of dive it really quickly into is this idea around Pop's growth as a coach, because you know, you even talked about physical touch. Now, we've had an episode or a couple episodes on the book, The Culture Code by Daniel Coyle. I don't know if you've read it, but Coyle talks
about it, not read it. Yeah.
And Coyle there talks about what's called the communication code. And he describes probably about 9 to 10 behaviors from elite leaders. And Greg Popovich is one of them. And, you know, it's people at Zappos, you know, the CEO there. I mean, he just goes around to all these elite leaders of these elite organizations, and he picks up on these certain behaviors. And I've kind of coined it like the communication code. And one of those is a lot of physical touch, you know, and then putting yourself in close physical proximity. But it's so incredibly cool to hear this, because one of my biggest questions, and I think other coaches' questions, are, do those things just come naturally to leaders? But you're saying, you know, that those things are things that he had to develop. He didn't do that early on, but he's learned these are ways to really connect with my guys. And I think so often coaches think building connections, you know, it's getting to your team and getting the buy-in is always in fiery speeches and big displays of passion and sometimes just the small little things day in and day out that coaches need to be doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the people I've been around in my life, they've always manufactured leadership to an extent. So I think leadership is evolved through the season. You have individual meetings. You steal five. Like Manu said, Pop was always teaching. He was always encouraging. He was always making emotional deposits. So like you got, I don't know, 15, 20, 30 minutes before practice. You have 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes during water breaks. You have 10, 15, 20 minutes, hour after practice. Those are three opportunities right there to go and grab guys and be intentional. You know, when I worked for Coach Strickland 2 years, I was an NCAA coach for 5 years, Division I, Division II. I was on the path to be a head Division I coach. And obviously, I went a different way, but he would always tell me, hey, before practice, grab this guy. Hey, after practice, go get a milkshake with this guy. Use your own money because it's illegal to. don't use your own money because it's illegal to. But anyway, you know, he would always tell me, you know, spend some time with this guy. You know, talking and fiery speeches and all that is a part of it. But it's just like you said, man, different ways to connect. Like, yes, you want to communicate with your players. You want to communicate with your troops. But it's that connection and communication that a lot of people talk. Very few connect. Right. A lot of people motivate. Very few people inspire and impact. Very, you know, a lot of people influence. Very few people impact. So to me, impact is eternal and inspiration lasts for decades. Motivation, influence, that's just temporary to me. That's how I kind of categorize it and use it in my curriculum. But you're exactly right, man. You have to remind people, hey, here's a good time to do this. Hey, you take the time out, Tony. I'm not talking to these guys. So Tony Parker, remember that whole deal? Like, that's not the first time they've done that. They just, that's what they do. Because I asked Manu about that. He said, man, Pop would do that all the time in practice. Coaches would sit at half court and have a cigar, so to speak, you know, and we would go 5-on-5-on-5. We'd go cutthroat and we would run drills. We would run practice. Like, that was intentional. You know what I mean? So, you show me a great student, I'll show you a great teacher. Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of these, you know, yeah, they were great talent, but, man, you know, leadership is definitely, manufactured to an, you know, and you got to spell it out for these guys sometimes.
Yeah, well, it's kind of going beyond your personality and kind of going into developing that character and that stuff. And I think a lot of coaches just use, oh, this is who I am as a coach as an excuse for certain types of things. And the bottom line, like you talk about manufacturing it and developing certain skills around that, I think is really, really important. Now, you work with a lot of coaches in a mentorship capacity and trainers. And I think you're really, really good at some practical ways that coaches can work on themselves, because the bottom line is what we're talking about here is to become a better coach. We've got to become a better person, right? We got to become a better person and we got to grow as a person. So, you know, I'm sure they're really, really simple, but you know, what are some of the kind of the practical ways that you think coaches should be working on themselves?
To me, it's easy to say, hard to do, but if, you know, perfect time of year, I guess, January 1st, you want to be a better coach. All right, number one, it starts with physical or mental, obviously both. You know, a lot of coaches focus on their mental. So whenever you have a coach that's an OG, there's got to be one in your area. You know, have somebody come and try to put you at rock bottom. You know, tell me, come evaluate my practice for a week, for a month, if only for a day. Point out to me some things in your opinion that I need to improve on, and really buy in and have them lock in. But do a self-evaluation. Be self-aware. I think that's a skill that I'm really trying to improve upon these last few years is self-awareness. What do I do good that I need to continue to improve on? And what do I need to improve on that maybe I don't really know because I can't step outside myself? I've become, you know, immune and gotten to the routine and I don't even notice. So that's one thing. And then, you know, once somebody tells you what you need to work on, I mean, I'm sure it evolves into, you know, one or all these categories. You know, mentally, you know, whatever you're struggling with, go research it and read a book on it, see a podcast on it, see a movie on it, whatever you need to do to get that information in your mind, then you need to apply it. You need to set short-term goals, long-term goals, but you can never rise above the information. You know, you can't rise above the level of the information you have. Number two, physical, man. A lot of these coaches struggle with health problems, and I get it. Like I've been in, you know, NBA atmospheres. I've worked for Nike, which is cutthroat, man. It's all about the dollar and producing and elite, and I get it, right? And college coaching, you know, you don't have a life. That's why I got out of it, man. God bless college coaches. You know, working for Tony Bennett, somebody like that, Tara Vanderbilt, maybe you have more of a balance, but you know, 90% of these programs, man, they work you, they get you. So these coaches have stress. They don't want to deal with it. They have anxiety. They have depression. So, you know, to me, one of the best ways to fight stress and anxiety is to sweat, work out. You can do it while you work out players. I've been doing it for years. So I'm 47. I still get a good sweat. I'm still intense. I don't know if I'm as fast or as efficient. I know I breathe a little harder now, but, you know, you got to physically work out, man. You got to look the part. Of course, there's Rick Majerus's and guys like that. But to me, you know, you got to be healthy as an individual, you know. And if you have a physical presence as a coach, boy, that's awesome. That is awesome. Emotionally, you know, emotionally, and which ties into spiritually, like, I really believe there's a God out there. I really believe in Jesus Christ. You might believe in Buddha. You might believe in the universe. You might believe in Allah. Whatever your higher power or higher being is, you got to have solitude every day, man. You got to have solitude. You got to have prayer time. You got to have meditation. A lot of people take yoga, and people need to have emotional management because they allow anger and stress and nervousness and anxiety and fear, right, come into daily decisions. And you see these meltdowns year after year with these players and coaches. I mean, you know, you understand every NBA team now has hired a psychiatrist, right, because it's a real problem. And I think that's a good thing. But I think if more people would have solitude and get into their spiritual time by themselves, which will affect their emotional balance and peace, then they'll be able to make more clear decisions, and they'll be able to stay on that compass, that purpose, and they'll be able to stay within their boundaries. So, you know, basically physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, coaches need to really work on their game, their physical game, their mental game, their emotional game. And so be intentional on spending time every day, every week, working on parts of yourself to be a better coach. And I know that was a long answer, but that's a whole nother. I mean, that could be a year's worth of podcast right there that, you know, because coaches look at their mental and emotional maybe a little bit, but, you know, it's the total package, JP.
Yeah. Yeah, well, let's unpack a few things there, right, real quick, which is, you know, that you obviously mentioned the physical and the sleep. You didn't mention the sleep, but I always bring up the sleep too. I think coaches don't sleep enough, but
they don't
work out enough, and it's really, really challenging. That's why I think it's important to have a long-term picture as a coach into, you know, where you want to go in life, you know, who you want to be, the type of family life you want to have. Do you want to be around for your kids? Do you want good relationships there? But we also know the physical exercise and sleep, even nutrition, they tie so much to our emotional and mental side, you know? That's a big piece. I think it was one of the things that's really cool there. You mentioned it right off the bat was getting someone to come in and watch your program for a few days. You know, that's something I have the privilege of doing. And I would say, honestly, over 50% of the coaches that I work with in mentorship that I come and visit on site, they've been in the coaching 20 plus years. You know, this isn't just for young guys. And you see with Pop, like Pop's grown and proven at his age in coaching. You see it yourself. You know, you've been in this business 30 years. You're still working at it. But I think it's really, really profound. It takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of vulnerability to have someone come in and tell you, hey, these are things you guys got to work on, not just as a team, but you got to work on as a coach. I think that's really, really powerful, you know, to have people do that and consistently, you know, not just that once off, but consistently come back and try to help you to grow in that way.
Yeah. Again, a lot of NCAA successful high school coaches, I mean, that's what they did when I was, you know, learning how to be a coach and moving up this industry. That's what I saw the great ones do. So, and that's still true today. You know, a lot of people hire mentors, you know, a woman to come in and tour your life. That's kind of how the word is broke down. A mentor, they just tour your, and I can't believe I didn't mention, you know, eating and diet and sleep. I was just talking to a coach the other day in New Jersey, high school coach, man, AAU program. He had his third heart attack. And I know the guy. I've been up there and done camps with him and worked out his players. And every time I'm up there, we go out to eat and it's fried food, it's Cokes. And I was like, yo, man, you're going to have another heart attack. And so, yes, that all in. And so that's what I was. And he allows me to speak to him like that. You know, so you got to have somebody that has been successful, because success, Kevin Eastman, leaves footprints. So you got to find them, fit them, and follow them. And the best way to do that is for somebody to come in and be very, very transparent. They praise right, they correct wrong, they have no agenda. And so if anybody listening, you can do that. Like I have that. My business manager does that for me from a business standpoint. My wife does that for me from a life standpoint. So I've asked coaches, hey, after workouts, I think I killed it, but I always ask, hey, anything I can do better, please let me know. Now, a lot of people don't have the, you know, again, they struggle with confrontation. They struggle with telling, you know, truth telling, but I'm very genuine in that. Hey, what can I do better? Would you like, what you didn't like? You know, I think that really, it keeps us grounded. It keeps us humble, keeps us creative. It keeps us growing, right? If you can grow and learn and get better, that's true peace and happiness, man. Not the wins are great, the money's great, the popularity, you know, feeds our ego, but growth, man, growth is true happiness. And the only way you grow is you got to get cut, right? Mm-hmm. You got to get cut. You got to feel pain. You got to be knocked down to go forward.
So I'm going to take a quick break in our conversation with Gannon to tell you about the Thrive On Challenge mentorship program. As Gannon mentions in this episode, and I hear many other successful coaches talk about frequently, we need mentors in our life, people that walk with us and they speak truth to us at times when others aren't willing or able to. And the problem for us as coaches, though, is where do we find those mentors? Well, at Thrive On Challenge, we've worked with over 40 coaches in the last 3 years through mentorship to help them create a transformational culture. Coaches have improved relationships, they've raised the standards in their programs, and they have built character, not just of their players, but in themselves. Not only have 100% of our coaches felt the experience exceeded expectations, 90% of them remain in the program today, which actually created a problem for me because I could only work with so many coaches. It's why we've created the Thrive On Challenge mentorship team. Now, I'm full until April, but both Nate Sanderson and Shane Souden have availability to take on 1 to 2 new coaches each in the next month. So if you're interested in learning more about the mentorship opportunity, schedule a call by clicking on the link in the episode details, or you can go to thriveonchallenge.com and learn more about everything included in the program, including the costs. And if you don't think you can afford it, don't worry, because nearly every coach's school, administration, or booster club supports and pays for the mentorship program. So it doesn't cost them money. It just costs time and a commitment to learn and grow. Now back to my conversation with Gannon Baker. There's 2 other things you mentioned just on, you know, we can't rise above our information. I think so many coaches say, you know what? I don't have time for reading. I don't have time for all that stuff. You don't not have time. Like if you don't invest the time, you know, like I think that's just a great, great, great line by you. You cannot, there's only so far you can go because you're not going to be learning. And there's so much good stuff out there with books and with newer podcasts and stuff like that. So that was great. And the last thing I think is solitude you mentioned, which was just, we've talked about that extensively on this podcast. I'm a big encourager with all my coaches I work with on journaling. Why is solitude so important for us as coaches?
So solitude is something where coaches have to be intentional about their time to get their, you know, their EQ, their emotional intelligence grounded and their spirit in the right direction. So their heart can be pure and their mind can be creative for ways to, through that practice, through that drill, through that game, basically, you know, touch lives and touch the world.
Yeah, it's amazing that you mention it because we've had so many coaches on the podcast before, Will Ray being one of them at episode 101 and 102, talking about how important solitude was for him on his coaching journey. I think for us as coaches, as we're trying to grow and we're trying to change our behaviors, the power of solitude, mindfulness, journaling, is that it helps us to change our thinking first, because so often we try to change certain behaviors without changing our thinking, and we have to change our thinking first. But solitude looks different for everyone. You know, it looks different for you as it does to me. And I think every coach has to explore with how they interact with that time. We use a lot of journaling and trying to introduce mindfulness to some of our coaches as well now, because it is such a powerful tool.
Yeah, every great one I've been around does. I spent time with Ray Allen. You know, he has quiet time. You know, when his quiet time is, he said after his run, when it's over, he'll run and he'll just look at a view. You'll see sometimes on his IG, he'll take pictures of where he just run. But he has quiet time. Mentor Kevin Eastman, one of the greatest coaches I've ever been around. Great book out there, Why the Best of the Best. He calls it think time. Right? Every day you got to have think time. And he got it from Pat Riley, which Pat Riley calls it alone time. Pat Riley, president of the Heat, he'll turn off his lights in his office, total dark, put a yellow legal pad on his desk and just sit there. And whatever comes to him, he'll write down. So, hey, you know what? It can't hurt me.
You know, and I think there's a lot of coaches go, man, I don't have 15 minutes to sit there and quiet. I'd say half the coaches, my response is pull out your phone, pull up screen time. Let's see how much time you spent on Twitter. Let's see how much time you spent on scrolling through news. All these things that are actually, the research is out. Their life take the life out of us. They create anxiety. Yeah. They create more comparison traps for us to fall into.
As I call it, time stealers. Like you said, man, you got to take coaches through the day and pick out things that steal their time.
Yeah, no, it's really hard though. Like it's really, really hard to do this type of stuff. It takes a lot of training. It's really, really uncomfortable for sure. This is, we're wrapping up here. Is there anything you want to kind of leave with listeners, you know, our coaches that are really just trying to be more transformational and impact their players?
Well, I tell you this, man, make sure you're clear on why you coach, because there's a lot of stress with coaching. And then there's a lot of highs with coaching. You know, you could think you're one of the smartest coaches in the world, and then eight, nine games later, you could be fighting for your job. So I would say really focus on the why. Why do you coach? Is it to keep your job? Is it to feed your family? You know, there's no wrong answer, but just stick to your why. And I'll repeat this again. True peace and true joy is growth. One, are the people that you're leading growing? Are they impacting their life? Do you see it? Do you feel it? There's got to be a proof of concept. And number two, are you growing? Because there's a lot of old and crusty coaches out there that just tear my heart up. And it has nothing to do with their chronological age. It has to do with their maturational age. You got to grow. You got to learn. You got to meet players where they're at. The great coaches that have coached, they've adjusted the way they coach. And so that right there, your why is everything. And if you continue to grow, you'll create, I'll use it, Kevin Sutton, right? Living trophies, which not only win for you on the court and do what you want them to do, but they'll have long lasting lives with their families, with their communities, with their global outreach.
That's it for our conversation with Gannon. Check him out on Twitter at Gannon Baker or GannonBakerBasketball.com. And as I mentioned during the episode, Thrive on Challenge helps coaches build a transformational culture. And one of the ways we do that is through personal mentorship and culture coaching. You can learn more about it at thriveonchallenge.com or just go ahead and schedule your free mentorship call today. The link is in the episode details of this podcast. Lastly, be sure to check us out next week as Nate and I are back to talk about how we can get our teams to play harder.